Welcome to HN Pod, your daily audio deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hawker News. I am your host, Mike.
And I am Sarah. It is great to be here with you all. Today we are covering yesterday's top stories from March 15th, 2026, and this is episode number 336. We have a really fascinating lineup today that perfectly captures the weird, wild, and sometimes worrying state of technology right now.
We really do. We are going to be talking about Canada's controversial new surveillance bill, an incredibly cheap 3D-printed guided rocket that has the hardware hacking community buzzing, and a new Chrome DevTools feature that lets AI agents directly debug your browser.
Plus, we will look at a hilarious but painful breakdown of a 49-megabyte news webpage, and we will wrap up with a legendary programmer's absolute frustration with the staggering stupidity of Spotify's AI DJ.
Let us dive right into the heavy stuff first. The top story yesterday was about Canada's Bill C-22, which is essentially mandating mass metadata surveillance of Canadians. This comes from a blog post by Michael Geist, who has been tracking Canadian tech law for decades.
Right. So the context here is that the Canadian government previously tried to sneak some massive warrantless access provisions into a border measures bill last spring. That faced huge backlash and failed. So now they are back with Bill C-22. Geist points out that it's really a tale of two bills. The first half is actually an improvement because they scrapped the crazy broad warrantless information demands. Now law enforcement can only ask telecom providers to confirm if they provide service to a specific person without a warrant. Getting actual subscriber info requires a judge's production order.
Which sounds like a win for privacy, until you read the second half of the bill. It establishes something called the SAIA, and this is where things get dark. It requires electronic service providers, which is defined so broadly it includes platforms like Google, Meta, and maybe even encrypted apps like Signal, to actively work with law enforcement on surveillance capabilities, and it mandates the retention of metadata for up to a year.
And the kicker is that they are required to keep these requests secret. The Hacker News comments on this were intense, as you would expect. A lot of people were comparing it to authoritarian models of mass surveillance, but there was one comment from a user named Godelsky that really stood out to me. They framed the legal debate in terms of engineering failure modes.
I loved that comment. They brought up Blackstone's ratio, the old legal principle that it is better that 10 guilty persons escape than that one innocent suffer.
Exactly. They said, as programmers, we naturally think about how a system fails. When a program fails, do you want it to fail open or closed? In a public building, you want a locked door to fail open in an emergency so people can escape. In a bank vault, you want it to fail closed. Godelsky argued that we have to evaluate laws the same way. When a surveillance law is abused, how does it fail? Are we okay with that failure mode?
It is such a Hacker News way to look at civil liberties. You build friction into the system intentionally. Investigative work should be difficult because that friction is the only thing keeping the power imbalance between the government and the people in check. Another commenter pointed out a massive loophole in the bill where a judge can waive the requirement to actually give the target a copy of the warrant.
Which immediately brought up discussions about parallel construction. That is where law enforcement uses secret surveillance to find something and then constructs a completely separate, normal-looking chain of evidence to take to court, so they never have to reveal the secret surveillance. It is a sobering read, and definitely a trend we are seeing globally, not just in Canada.
Speaking of having access to everything, let us move to our next story. Google just shipped a major enhancement to the Chrome DevTools NCP server in the Chrome M144 beta. NCP stands for Model Context Protocol, and this update allows coding agents like Claude to directly connect to your active browser sessions.
This is actually huge for developer workflows. Previously, if you wanted an AI agent to help you debug a web app, it had to spin up its own isolated browser instance. That meant you had to figure out how to get the AI past login screens, two-factor authentication, and all that friction. Now, you can just point your AI coding assistant at the browser window you're already using.
The example they gave in the Chrome developer blog is great. You are clicking around your own app, you see a failing network request in the DevTools, and you just ask your AI agent to investigate that specific element or network call. The AI can see the exact state of your DOM, the network waterfall, everything.
Of course, Google put some guardrails in.
you have to explicitly enable remote debugging, and Chrome throws up a big banner saying it is being controlled by automated software, plus a permission dialog. But the Hacker News comments immediately went to the unintended, or maybe fully intended, alternative uses for this.
Oh yeah, the top comment was from someone who was already using tools like Playwright and Claude to basically build custom, strongly typed APIs for websites that do not offer APIs. They just have the AI navigate the site, click everything, record the network responses, and bypass all the gigabytes of ads and markup.
Someone else brought up the endless arms race with YT-DLP, the popular video downloading tool. YouTube is constantly changing their JavaScript challenges to block downloaders. The commenters were speculating that having a lightweight AI agent hooked into an active browser session could just automatically solve those challenges by behaving exactly like a human user, completely bypassing the cat and mouse game.
It really shows how AI agents are changing the definition of an API. If an agent can just drive a browser exactly like I do, the visual interface becomes the API.
So navigating the DOM to navigating the actual sky, our next story is wild. A GitHub repository by a user named Novatic14 went viral yesterday. It is a fully documented $96 3D printed rocket that recalculates its midair trajectory using a $5 sensor.
This is the kind of project that makes you step back and realize we are living in the future. It is a proof of concept for a guided rocket system built entirely from consumer electronics and 3D printed parts. The flight computer is an ESP32 microcontroller, which costs practically nothing, paired with an MPU6050 inertial measurement unit. That is the $5 sensor doing the heavy lifting.
The launcher itself has GPS, a compass, and a barometer. They designed it in Fusion 360 and simulated the aerodynamics in OpenRocket. The GitHub repo has all the CAD files, the firmware, and the simulation data.
The engineering is undeniably impressive, but the Hacker News comments quickly pivoted to the terrifying implications of this. A commenter named Red Grid Tactical pointed out that the mid-flight trajectory recalculation is the exact same basic problem that military guidance systems solve with hardware that used to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right. The gap between consumer electronics and military specification capability is just evaporating. 10 years ago, an inertial measurement unit capable of doing this would have cost more than this entire build. Now you can buy it on Amazon for the price of a cup of coffee.
There was this incredible anecdote in the comments that I have to share. Someone recalled a story from their robotics professor in the 90s about reverse engineering a Cold War-era Russian heat-seeking missile. The Western engineers were baffled because there was almost no guidance circuitry, no computer, just a single light-dependent resistor attached to a coil that moved one fin.
I read that. It was so clever. The missile was designed to be inherently unstable, so it naturally wobbled and rotated as it flew. When the sensor saw a bright light, like a jet engine exhaust, it moved the fin one way to straighten out. When it lost the light, it moved the other way to wobble more. So it basically just explored the sky in a cone shape until it latched onto the brightest thing and rode it to the target. Zero processing power, just pure mechanical ingenuity.
It is a great reminder that smart engineering does not always mean more code. But back to the $96 rocket, people were definitely raising eyebrows about the ITAR implications. ITAR is the set of US regulations controlling the export of defense articles. Publishing open source guidance firmware and CAD files for what is essentially a man-portable air defense system prototype is, well, it is a bold move.
It really highlights the dual-use nature of all this maker technology. The democratization of hardware is amazing for hobbyists, but it definitely keeps security folks awake at night.
Speaking of things that keep people awake at night, let us talk about modern web development. A blog post by Shubham titled "The 49 Megabyte Web Page" shot to the top of Hacker News yesterday.
This was a painful read, mostly because it is so true. Shubham went to the New York Times website just to glance at four headlines. What he got was 422 network requests and 49 megabytes of data downloaded to his browser. It took 2 full minutes for the page to settle.
To put that in perspective, he noted that Windows 95 fit on 28 floppy disks. You could fit the entire operating system that ran the world in the 90s into the single page load. Or, if you remember the iPod era, a high-quality MP3 was about 4 megabytes. So loading the New York Times homepage is the data equivalent of downloading an entire 12-track music album, just to read a few paragraphs of text.
The breakdown of what is actually in that 49 megabytes is infuriating. It's not high-resolution photos of the news. It is a sprawling, unregulated programmatic ad auction happening entirely in the client browser. Before you even finish reading a headline, your phone's CPU is forced to process dozens of concurrent bidding requests to ad exchanges.
He called it hostile architecture, which is a great term. The publisher is trading long-term reader attention for short-term pennies. And the surveillance is relentless. He found background pixels dropping, cross-site identity stitching, and ironically, a tracking endpoint named purr.nytimes.com. He described it as a cat purring while it rifles through your pockets.
The Hacker News comments were a mix of validation and horror stories from web developers. One user talked about how their own company site was downloading 750 megabytes per page load because every single video in a carousel was preloading. It only worked for the developers because they were sitting in an office with a direct fiber line to their data center.
That led to a great discussion about what they call crop top duty, the idea that developers should be forced to test their sites on a 10-year-old laptop or throttle their browser's network top to a 3G connection. If you are building the web on an M4 Mac with a gigabit connection, you have zero empathy for the average user's experience.
Exactly. If interaction cost is the sum of mental and physical efforts a user must exert to reach their goal, modern news sites are basically digital park benches covered in anti-homeless spikes. You are forced to wait, click away pop-ups, and drain your battery just to read the news.
Let us end today on something a bit lighter, but equally frustrating for the user. Charles Petzold, the legendary programmer and author of the classic book Code, wrote a blog post titled "The Appalling Stupidity of Spotify's AI DJ."
For those who do not know, Charles Petzold literally wrote the canonical reference books for Windows programming in the 90s. He is a brilliant technologist, but he is also a massive classical music fan, and his post is just a glorious rant about how completely broken digital music metadata is for anything that is not a 3-minute pop song.
Right. He points out that calling a Beethoven symphony a song is borderline illiterate. In classical music, you have composers, not just performing artists. And most importantly, you have works that are broken down into sequential movements.
So Petzold decides to test Spotify's new AI DJ. He asks it to play Beethoven's 7th symphony. Instead of starting at the first movement, the DJ plays the famous 2nd movement, then completely abandons Beethoven and plays an Italian opera, then some Shostakovich, then Mozart.
He tries to get more specific. He says, "Play Beethoven's 7th symphony in its entirety." The DJ says, "Sure, all 9 minutes of it," which is hilarious because the symphony is way longer than 9 minutes. It plays the 2nd movement again, then plays a nocturne by John Field.
He finally asks it to play all 4 movements in numerical order. The DJ confidently says, "Let us do this." It plays the 1st movement of Beethoven's 3rd symphony, then the 1st movement of the 7th, skips around, and then the DJ announces it is going to switch the vibe and starts playing Aerosmith's Dream On.
Petzold's conclusion is brutal. He asks, how can people claim AI can compose music when it cannot even grasp the basic concept of a multi-movement symphony?
The Hacker News comments had a really interesting debate about this. A lot of people pointed out that this is not actually an AI failure, it is a product failure. Spotify's DJ is not a large language model reasoning about music theory. It is basically just their standard shuffle algorithm wrapped in a text-to-speech voice synthesizer that reads canned transitional phrases.
Exactly. Spotify's underlying data model was built for pop singles, not classical compositions. No amount of AI voice generation can fix the fact that their database does not understand the relationship between movements in a symphony. But as one commenter noted, given Petzold's technical background, he probably knows that. He is just using it to point out that there's no excuse for a multi-billion dollar tech company to have a music discovery feature this fundamentally broken.
It is a great reminder that slapping the word AI on a feature does not magically fix your underlying data architecture. If your database thinks Beethoven's 7th is just a collection of random songs, your AI DJ is going to sound like an idiot.
Well, that is all the time we have for today. From government surveillance and AI browser agents to $96 rockets and 49 megabyte web pages, it has been a packed episode.
Thanks for tuning in to HN Pod. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend or leave us a review. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the top stories from Hacker News. Have a great day, everyone.